Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay and it is my privilege, pleasure and honor to introduce to you what is by now, I hope, a very familiar face to you, and that is the face of Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. Today's topic is on a high note of life, liberty and happiness, and today we hope to share aspects of spirituality with you that will cause you to take a new look at the life that you are leading. We ask that you look at your own conscience and ask yourself the simple question: is are you the person that you yourself would like to be, or were you made that by external circumstances and somebody that was out of your control? Sister Denise will share with us from her vast spiritual experience her own journey towards life, liberty and happiness. And to that end, on behalf of yourself, I would like to welcome into our studio today our very special speaker, Sister Denise. Very, very warm welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So life, liberty and happiness, that is a universal dream, is it not? But if we look at what humanity has become, that's not the case. There are people whose lives are anything but liberty and happiness. Could you tell us why humanity has reached the stage of the opposite of the title?
Over the course of what we call the time cycle, the power of the soul has been degraded and depleted. The karma of people in a general way has become progressively more damaging to the self, against one's own better interests, and just the effect of time erodes the quality and power of the human soul individually and collectively. So this is really an aspect, an attribute of being very close to the end of the time cycle. And when you're at the end of the time cycle, then you're also at the time of a new beginning. So there's really very opposing energies affecting us globally at this time because of this point in time.
Okay, so you have obviously steeped yourself in spirituality for decades. How have you achieved liberty, freedom? What does freedom mean to you? How do you define it? Well, and the reason I ask is because some people live in physical jails, but other people live in mental jails, and some people live in the jail of their own feelings. How have you achieved liberty yourself?
Well, in many people's minds, many philosophers, they think a lot about liberty and freedom. So freedom to be, freedom to think, freedom to act, you know. A soul really is uncomfortable being not allowed to be or do something that the heart says, this is my right. And as an individual, I've always been very, very drawn to freedom, the idea of freedom, the ideal of freedom. And so I spend a lot of time ensuring that I have the freedom to do what I want, say what I want, think what I want, be where I want to be, how I want to be, if I want to be, and not if not. So that's just me. That's always been like that. And then as I started to learn the different aspects of spiritual study, I began to realize that freedom, for example, in India, the goal of life, a spiritual goal of life, is freedom that's given the name mukti. And there are two concepts in this. One is mukti, which is freedom. That means your freedom from being trapped trapped in the body on the earth, in the wheel of karma, and you are in nirvana, and the idea is you go there and you don't come back. So that is the main, one of the key goals of a Hindu practice. But there's another idea, which is called Jivan Mukti. That means to say you are in life, you're on the earth, you're in the middle of society, and you're free. And I found that very attractive, that to be in the midst of everything, not denying life on earth, not denying relationships, being in the body, all of these things, and yet being free. You know, to me that's very interesting. And in order to be free like that, you have to have a very good understanding of the laws of karma, because when you go against them, well, you get trapped, you come in bondage. So the opposite of Jivan Mukti, a life of freedom, is Jivan Bandh, which is a life of bondage. And this is where most people are, is in a life of bondage. And that bondage is really the bondage of karma. So I became very interested in learning as much as I could about karma so that I could experiment with it and actually create a life of freedom so that I can really, you know, spread my wings and fly and really enjoy being who I am, and also to be free to do the most worthwhile, the most interesting, the most rewarding activities and be with the most interesting people. To me, that's a very interesting possibility, and it's all to do with having freedom in life.
Sister Denise, what I could not help but notice is you speak of freedom, and you specifically mention attachments. As human beings, we love our traps. We love being stuck on this one and hooked into that one, and we nowadays we love our PlayStations and we love our Xboxes and we love our televisions, and these sweet traps, I'm still not sure whether we choose them or they choose us, okay? But we love our traps, as it were, and yet we still love liberty. Are you saying that you've got to give up one in order to achieve the other, or how does one do it?
I think it's a love-hate relationship.
Is it? Because I've yet to meet somebody who will voluntarily give up that something that they would attach to. I once heard someone say that attachments cannot be conquered, they can merely be replaced with another object of one's affection, as it were.
Well, that's ineffective, isn't it? You can't get free like that. You're just going from the frying pan into the fire, which a lot of people do. But I think that if you want to be free, then you have to think about what is the price. And it's a very, very high price. But then when you have something really valuable that you want, then it's very expensive. So you have to be willing to pay the price. And I feel that these attachments that you were speaking about are really love-hate relationships. You love in the sense that you're bound to it, you can't live without it, you're addicted to it, but you hate it because it diminishes who you are, it betrays you, it sabotages your being, and it lessens the quality of your life. So you don't really love it, you're just in bondage to it. So then, if you want to be free, you have to really think, you know, what is freedom? And I think you also have to taste it, because once you've tasted real freedom, it verifies that, yeah, this is what I want. And then you also have to see what the price is, and then see, am I prepared to give up? Basically, what you have to give up is your weaknesses. You have to give up your bondages, your traps. And at every step, when you come across a bondage or a trap, you need to see it for what it is in order to be willing to give it up. And so for that, you need good eyes. So in spirituality, there's one thing, one kind of eye that you develop, which is very helpful in this, and that's called the third eye. And the third eye is the one that sees past just the physical, visual, sensorial aspect. And you see the nature of the trap, and then you can really see, do you really want to be in such bondage? And once you've seen it for what it is, it's easy to let go of it. It's when you can't see it for what it is that you just can't come out of the trap.
Mm. So Denise, the third aspect of today's topic is happiness. I can think of a number of people who will only be happy when they feel the security of all of their attachments. And I know some who, once they freed from their chains, as it were, okay, they can't experience any happiness at all because they love their chains. So the liberty that you're referring to, it brings happiness. How is it that sometimes it's our vices that make us think we're happy? Why is that?
It's an illusion, isn't it?
Okay, let me put it this way. Two people are in love, and they it's a symbiotic relationship. There's no dog and parasite situation. And they married for 51 years, highly unusual to see that in this day and age. They're very close, and then they die towards the end of their lives, in their late 80s, 1-2 weeks away from each other. If you ask them at the beginning, middle, and end of their marriage, are you attached to each other, they would say yes, but they say, this attachment brought me happiness. If they would live the life again, they choose it again because they were happy.
I think that this word attachment is defined in many different ways. There's a lot of people who will use the word attachment for love, and they will mean love. They won't mean bondage, you see. Otherwise, attachment, you know, if this object is attached to another object, that one is also attached to this one, and you can't get away if you want to. A relationship that has lasted 50 years must have involved a lot of negotiation and work, so that they have created a very beautiful relationship, a very balanced relationship, and they say, yes, we are attached to each other, but they're not in bondage with each other.
What does bondage mean in that context?
Bondage means you want to get away, but you can't.
Okay.
Like if you're in prison, you're thinking about getting out. If somebody has got a chain around your leg attached to the wall, that's bondage. You're not comfortable there, you see. So if you are in connection with another person, in spiritual language, we would call this a relationship of harmony, not a relationship of bondage, you see. So the relationship of bondage is where the word attachment is properly used. But because people use the word attachment to mean love, there's a bit of confusion because of the, you can say, inaccurate use of the word.
Mm. Okay. So, happiness. What is happiness to you?
Well, I think...
Something tells me it's very different from the definition of happiness.
person died. And then I was involved in all of the rituals connected with death, and then the relatives, and spend time with them, and so on. And I had this very, very intense and powerful experience of happiness when it was all over. And I thought to myself, this is really unsuitable. Talking to myself, you should not be feeling happy. This is a tragic situation. You should be feeling tragic. But it was too much for me. And then I was curious that this really powerfully good feeling, where did it come from? Why was it there? And later on, I had a discussion with someone really very wise who said to me, do you know why you were so happy? And I pursuit of happiness through financial gain, who said that they never really experienced happiness until they began philanthropy. So there is something really important in putting philanthropy into your life. If you really want to have happiness, it has to be constantly doing something which is benefiting other people, and then you will constantly be receiving happiness as a byproduct of that.
I was going to ask you this question, but you just answered it. Happiness is a secondary virtue. You use the word byproduct.
Yeah.
So I can't wake up one day and decide I'm going to be happy because I want to be happy. Does it not work that way?
Well, you could say, okay, I want to be happy, but then you have to investigate, what do I have to do in order to be happy? And what you have to do is bring benefit to others, because the return of that will be your happiness. So if you want to have good health, wealth, and good relationships, it means that in all of these areas of interaction with the world, everything you do has to be motivated by bringing benefit to others, and then you will have it.
Mr. Denise, what is your definition of a good quality life? Because if you look at how densely overpopulated the world has become, one cannot help notice that the quality of life of a shockingly large number of people is extremely poor. I mean, you have countries where 70 to 80% of the population live in abject poverty. Not poverty, abject poverty, way below the line set by the United Nations is what one needs to have a good quality of life. I can't help but wonder, these people are alive, but their life has got not much by way of quality attached to it. And yet, on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who have an abundance of everything. And yet, they don't seem to be very happy either. The exceptionally wealthy does not mean they're exceptionally happy. Okay, so how would you define somebody who's got a good quality of life? What are the ingredients for that?
Well, I think it's very important to have a good quality relationship with yourself, with the divine, and that your interaction with the earth and people is that you're bringing something in. In a way, this is love. If you're loving, bringing benefit, you will have a good quality of life. I think it's quite a simple recipe, but in order to be loving, in order to convey something to another, you have to be connected with the source, because in and of yourself you don't have what you need. So you need to be connected with God or the Supreme Being so that you can draw that into yourself and then let it pass through so that it's benefiting others. If you just keep it for yourself, it won't work.
Mm.
And even it has been said that if you keep divine energy or divine blessings to yourself, it's like theft, because it's supposed to be spread. And so if it's not spread, then you're depriving others of something that you're maybe a conduit for or an instrument for. But I feel that this is how to have the best quality life.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Denise, in one's pursuit of these three aspects that we're discussing today, life, as it does to everybody, sends some knocks, no? Some knocks. And many, when this happens, many people give up on themselves, on life, on their closest relationships, and resort to, I don't know, coping mechanisms. It's called copping out, checking out, you know, etc. So how do you use your spiritual principles to deal with life's knocks, the gentle ones and the not so gentle ones?
I think I'd start with saying, you know, life is a gift. The fact that I have life is a gift. The knocks are messages, tests. They have a purpose, they have a reason. They're not trying to tell me that I don't have value or I'm no good. But I think that you have to learn that. It doesn't come automatically, because the way people interpret these things, if something bad happens to me, then it means I'm nothing, or I thought I was something, but in reality I'm not, or I don't know what this is all about, it's too confusing, I'm just going to give up.
Mm.
Yeah. I think you have to really be exposed to teachings that may be different from your sort of reaction, which is a kind of very, in a way, infantile mentality. You know, the very young person always considers that, you know, something bad is going on, it's my fault. And I think as you grow, you come out of being at the center of your world and you start to see that things are happening that are not caused by you or anything to do with you, they're just there. And this development of a person, the maturing of a person, sometimes stops. And this is what childhood trauma will do. Then if you want to recover from childhood trauma, it means you have to go back to that developmental stage, maybe at a later period of life, and grow yourself up again. And that is a lot of work, but
yes,
that's what you have to do.
Yeah, and how do you know you're worth that journey? Because you kind of, that is the very definition of reinventing yourself, to regrow up. Mm. And you can start doing this at 50. How do you do, you know, adults, a lifetime's worth of work in such a time?
I think that it's very, very helpful if you have a good support system around you for that, you see. Because if you're trying to do this on your own, the power of self-sabotage is huge. The power of doubt in the self is huge. So I think that's very important. Bringing the presence of God into your life is very good positive reinforcement, you know. Because if you can feel that that, you know, really valuable, sacred being cares about you, then you need to care about yourself.
Mm.
If nobody cares about you, then you don't need to care about yourself.
How does God make you free?
Many ways.
Okay, not necessarily you specifically, but how does God make one or give one the feeling of liberty?
Well, freedom is freedom from certain bondages and freedom to be who you really are. So I think that God, the teacher, provides you with enough information to make you start to take responsibility for yourself, for your happiness, make your life worthwhile, and pull yourself out of your traps. You know, I think God will provide you with tools and strength and support and many things, which all of which result in a person having all the possibilities to claim their freedom, but they just have to take that one step and do it.
Can one just become happy just by being with God? Because I understand one of his titles are the ocean of happiness, or is it in that context also secondary virtue? You do something for God, to God, with God, and he gives you something back. Is that a transaction as well? Or is it just being with him that makes one happy?
Well, the ocean of happiness means exactly what? In the Hindi language, the word happiness, sukh, doesn't mean an emotion. It means that all of the physical things you need and all of the subtle things you need in order to have all your needs met, that is sukh. You know, so God will provide you with your physical and subtle needs, and then you won't have dukkh, which is the sorrow, there's deprivation. So, I mean, there's a translation issue here. In English, happiness is a kind of nice feeling, whereas in Hindi, it's not. It's that the necessary things are in place. That is sukh. You see, so there's a cultural issue here. Ideas and words really don't translate that easily from one language to another. And then when it comes to concepts, there can be a lot of confusion too.
Okay. Mr. Denise, unfortunately, we are now at the end of today's episode, so I wish to thank you. If your own pursuit is one of life, liberty and happiness, we wish you luck on your journey. And as Sister Denise has shared throughout this show and all other episodes, it's about tapping your own spiritual resources that brings you these virtues and values. It doesn't come to you by accident. It does involve some level of introspection and work on your part. But one of the most beautiful things that she said today is, know that you are worth it, and God thinks so as well. And obviously she had shared that one needs the assistance of the divine to reach this stage of life, liberty and happiness. On that note, Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really great having you, and thank you at home, and we hope to see you again soon. Take care. Goodbye.